chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Kara Golden on the show today. Kara is the founder and CEO of Hint, which is best known for its award-winning Hint water, the leading unsweetened flavored water. Well, Kara, I cannot tell you how excited I have been about this podcast episode and just spending a little time with you. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show. I know you're in San Francisco. I'm in St. Louis, you know, but thank goodness for technology, right? That we can do this.
Exactly. Very excited.
Recently, our good friend Yosei Zylstra was hosting an event that you were speaking at, and she invited me along, and I told you I really had not tried Hint. But as I heard you speaking, Kara, I started ordering cases online of Hint. And I am telling you what, our family is hooked. Every one of our family loves Hint. We're drinking it.
I love it. That's so great.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about growing up. And I know a little bit about you, but I'd love for you to tell our listeners kind of a little bit about your childhood.
So I moved to Scottsdale, Arizona when I was just not quite 3 years old. I was an original settler in Scottsdale, and my dad had the vision to move there. We moved from Minneapolis, and he didn't want to shovel snow anymore, having five children. And so we moved to Scottsdale. It was like 100,000 people in Scottsdale at the time. So I always joke that I was an original settler there, that it was just a very different situation than it is today. And I grew up in a house that my dad was part of a food company, was part of Armour Food Company. And when we moved to Scottsdale, my mom actually made a decision a couple of years into living there where she was going to get into fashion. She was an art history major. She had been always super into art and just the history of it and teaching and doing some work in art classes, museum work, et cetera. And that's when she made this decision that she was going to go into fashion. And I remember my dad thinking, okay, well, who's going to cook dinner? I mean, very old school. And he worked in a food company. And my mom's like, well, why don't you just go create dinner? And so my dad developed a brand inside of Armour Food Company called Healthy Choice. And it was really interesting. They were acquired shortly after by a company called ConAgra. Again, I'm like a little kid understanding. My dad's barely talking about acquisitions. And who knew how much I was actually absorbing from this conversation? You know, I think more than anything, I felt it was, you know, an environment where I had older brothers and sisters that were 14 and 15 years older than me, and then 2 and 3 years older than me, almost like two different sets of families. And with it, they just had different opportunities, right? So my brother was not only having a job early on, but he was also fixing up Volkswagens and flipping them. And so I often talk about how much I learned even just listening to him sitting in the garage, like fixing up cars, like why color makes a difference in a sale. And they should always have stereos. And of course, back then it was 8 tracks. I mean, it was just like, that was the key thing. Anyway, so fast forward a little bit when I thought it was time to finally be able to, get a job. My first job, I guess I did some babysitting a little bit, but my first kind of real job was working in a toy store. And so many people have picked up on that in the book because I, you know, knew that I was supposed to be 16 to get a job, but the person who owned the toy store that I walked into actually offered it to me. And so my dad, I remember when I came home and I said, "Dad, I got a job on Sundays. I'm going to be doing the cash register." And he said, "So do they know you're not 16? And I said, "I don't know. It never came up in the conversation." And he said, "Did you show your ID?" And I was like, "I don't have an ID. I'm 14. You know, I mean, who knew, right? So, you know, here I am, a kid, and I'm learning all kinds of things like, it's not about quantity of merchandise. It's about quality and limiting selection and, you know, having the things that people really want. You know, it was back then, people always asked me, what was it? I said, Cabbage Patch dolls for girls and Legos. And it was like, you had to have those things. Otherwise, your store didn't look like there was anything there. And then in addition, because I just became really a quick study on merchandise, the owner of the store asked me to go to the toy fairs with her. And so I was sort of like Tom Hanks and Big. I was going and, you know, learning, and I was just a sponge. I mean, it was so fascinating to me. And my parents both just were amazed at how I came home and we're all having dinner and I'm talking about margins and how you can only mark things up so much. And
I just love it.
Right? It was amazing.
I just love it.
Yeah. And so did that and then remained in high school and obviously in Arizona. And then when time came for college, I mean, we were super middle class and it was very important for all of us to go to college, but we were all going in state. So I went to Arizona State University, was waitressing actually a little bit when I was in high school.
And you loved that job. You love it. Was the Tiki restaurant.
Exactly. And in fact, it's funny because I was back in Arizona last week and I went to the Tiki. And it's funny, this one guy who was there, his name's Alfonso, he was there 30 years ago and he's still there. And I learned so much about everything, like having a quality product is the number one thing. The food is not that expensive. It's excellent Mexican food. I would make 30 years ago, $200 a day in tips. It was crazy because they understood the turning of the tables is very fast and the food was really good. So there's so many lessons there about making the customer happy. If the people didn't like the food, then it was like eliminate it from the bill. There was no conversation. Keep the customer happy. Like all of these little things along the way that again, I now talk about and really have shared these stories with so many people along the way that it's just about your journey and about these things that you learn along the way. And not every day was great waitressing, right? You learn from the challenging times and how you could handle things better. So anyway, waitressed, ended up graduating, and I was a journalism major with a minor in finance, and I wanted to write. I wanted to go and work at Fortune magazine. And I decided most of publishing, especially back then, and the sort of the hot and hip magazines, they were all being written out of New York. And so I thought, I'm moving to New York. All my friends were going in a lot of different directions, and none of the magazines from New York were coming on campus to recruit. And so I just decided I'm going to buy a plane ticket and I'm going to go to New York. And I remember my friends saying to me, "Aren't you scared? Do you know anybody there?" And I'm like, "I don't know. What's the worst that could happen? I guess I don't get a job, but at least I get a trip to New York and I can go figure it out." And so that was, you know, an amazing experience. And I didn't get a job at Fortune, but I got a job at a sister magazine called Time Magazine, which was excellent. And I went on from there. I was recruited out of there to kind of a late stage startup, which it's funny to even think about it this way, but a company called CNN. And so Ted Turner was still running around the offices. Not only I learned about the difference between magazines and sort of television and different types of media and the similarities and the differences, but also about culture. And I didn't know I was learning about culture, but Ted Turner was walking around with his suit on and cowboy boots. I mean, even in Arizona, that didn't happen, you know, and at Time, nobody wore cowboy boots to work. I mean, it was just a whole different deal. So I was there for a few years and then moved to Silicon Valley with my fiance that I met in New York, Theo. And when we came out here, the first thing and really the first person that I thought about and sort of associated Silicon Valley and San Francisco with was Steve Jobs. I saved all my pennies when I was in college from my tips at Teepee to buy a Macintosh computer. And I remember the main reason why I bought a Mac was because I was a journalism major. I had papers all the time. And I don't know about you, but writing papers on a typewriter and having whiteout and like screwing up your keys with the whiteout and you'd be scrubbing them to try and, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm digging this. It was like small, not as small as computers are today, but I really liked it. And I loved the design and the aesthetic, but also that it worked. And it was just amazing to me. And so anyway, when I moved to Silicon Valley, I thought, I wonder how I get a job in tech at Apple so that I could go and be with Steve Jobs. And I couldn't figure that out. I didn't know if I needed more education or exactly what I needed in order to do that. But I stumbled upon a little startup that was a spin out of Apple. And I thought, I don't know, close enough. Maybe eventually they'll get back to Apple. Maybe I'll meet Steve at some point. And it was doing CD-ROM shopping. And I thought, well, I like to shop. I mean, maybe that could be a really fun job. I don't know what I would do there. Maybe I could just go be an assistant, but I just cold called a company called Two Market, and it was five guys in an office, not in a garage, but pretty darn close. And I'll never forget just sitting there, kind of an informational interview. Two things I learned. Number one, they were all really excited about the idea that I had worked at brands, at CNN and Time. And my dad always said, you cannot make a mistake by working for a brand. And I really, really felt it.
That's a great piece of advice, Kara.
Right?
Right? Yes, that is.
So I don't even know that they asked what I did at these companies, but they were so obsessed with the fact that I had been working under the leadership of Ted Turner. I mean, they weren't in media, but they were just like, oh, he's so innovative. He's so, you know, really, really interesting, visionary, et cetera, et cetera. And I was obsessed that they had all worked for Steve Jobs, right? And so we're all in this room having a love fest over, you know, these previous people that we had worked for. And I remember one of the guys asking me, do you think you can contribute? And I had never been asked that question before and never really been told when I was in college either that it was about building the right resume. And I thought here, they really wanted to hear if I was a thinker, whether I could show up, whether or not I was going to add some sort of value to the mix. So I guess they did, and they hired me to run business development. And so my role was actually to go out and talk to catalogers like J.Crew and retailers that didn't even have a catalog yet, The Gap. And I just thought, this is amazing. And so I would, you know, meet all of these amazing CEOs who wanted to know more about the internet. And I know with your company, you were around the same time. And it was just super kick in the pants. I mean, I laughed because friends of mine would be kind of manager level at some of these companies. They're like, how are you getting these meetings with these CEOs? And I said, because I actually have something to contribute. And that's a little lesson that I share.
Great lesson.
Reaching out to people and saying, hey, can I have 30 minutes of your time? Or my first question as a CEO is, why would I do that? But for me, I was actually figuring out what I had to add, like what value I had to add. So that was really, really interesting time. And then after Two Market, we were acquired by America Online, and I ran the e-commerce and shopping partnerships there for a total of almost 7 years. And then that was $1 billion in revenue. Learned so much, and it was amazing. But when I left, it's interesting. I wouldn't have said this then. I was saying things like, I'm kind of bored. The company's at a different phase. I was, you know, managing 200 people in the company at that point. And that's when I really decided I have these kids, these three kids under the age of four that I want to go spend some more time with. And, you know, didn't want to be traveling as much as I wanted to. And that's when I really came up with this idea for Hint totally by accident when I was actually trying to get myself healthy. And, you know, during that time, I had gained a bunch of weight over the course of many, many years, especially my pregnancies. I could gain weight really easily, but I couldn't lose the weight. And I had developed terrible adult acne that I didn't even have when I was a teenager. And then my energy levels were really low, and I've never had low energy. So I knew it was time to kind of reset myself. And I thought, while I'm in between jobs, that's what I'm going to do. And
maybe do some self-care.
Exactly. And do some self-care.
Yeah.
And I had grown up, you know, in athletics. I knew how to work out. I was like, I figured out that I was doing all of that stuff right. But I had never dieted before. I had never counted calories. And I was really starting to do that. And none of it was working. And that's when I looked at my drink consumption. And I was drinking diet soda, Diet Coke in particular.
You said 10 to 12 a day.
It was crazy. And, you know, it's fascinating because I didn't really think by giving that up, I was going to realize anything. It was sort of like, let me just eliminate that idea of could this be causing the problem? But I didn't really think that that was it. And 2.5 weeks later, I lost 24 pounds.
That is just crazy.
And people would see me and they'd say, you look like a totally changed person. I mean, I don't know what you did, but something happened here. And then I would share the story because I was somewhat surprised myself. Mm-hmm. And then I think somewhere along the way, I said, it's all good, except one thing. Water is so darn boring. And there's some people that find water a beautiful thing. I personally should have been enjoying water my whole life growing up in Arizona, but I didn't. And so I started slicing up fruit and putting it in the water. I never was looking at it from a calorie standpoint at this point. I thought, oh, it's probably just a couple of calories, but I didn't really know the truth until later. And I really just wanted it for taste, and that was it. And so that was kind of the beginning of thinking every single day I was just so surprised. And when I would talk to my friends initially and then customers, they were surprised too that diet sweeteners were causing me to not be able to lose weight. And I thought, that is so strange. And, you know, it's funny, fast forward many, many years, I've had conversations with soda executives over the years. And it's really interesting because I think most consumers, especially when I launched Hint, thought that diet sweeteners equated to health. I certainly did. And soda executives would tell you back then, 16 years ago, that that's not true. And that was not the memo that I got. I got the memo that soda's bad, and diet is pretty darn good. That was my situation. And I think more than anything, just going back to the AOL experience, when I left AOL, I was saying things like, I'm bored, you know, it's a different company, all of these things. I kept thinking I'm going to go find a different tech company and go do something different. But when I stumbled upon health and what really interested me every single day to get up and work on, that's when I thought, gosh, I could actually launch a product like Hint and help a lot of people gain health that have been tricked like me. Again, I had been hearing it from friends and from customers, educating them about my own experience, and everybody seemed as surprised as me. So I thought that'd be really fun to do. I didn't think of it as launching a company or launching a new category or any of those things. I just thought if I could launch something that really helped people, that would be really awesome on a lot of levels, and it'd be a lot of fun. And I think going back to what, you know, the guy said about To Market, I felt like I could contribute. And I was bringing something really valuable to people. And so that was really my own kind of motivation.
Yeah, that was your big purpose. Mm-hmm. And I love that. You wanted to help people be the best version of themselves.
Totally.
And you're still doing that. And we'll get into this. But like, even with what you've shared in your new book, Undaunted, and I know you speak, and it really all goes back to, if you can share something in your own experience that will help someone else, I mean, there's nothing more gratifying than that.
Totally.
But you know what? We do need to take a quick break. And then I really want to dive into Hint and all the lessons that you've learned there. It's been such an amazing journey. And then I want to talk about your book, Undaunted. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Kara Golden.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over 2 decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities.
So welcome back, everyone. Kara, I want to back up just 1 minute because I think we went really fast over a very important part of your life. And you have a crazy timeline, but you and Theo married in 1994. Then your first child, Emma, came along in what, 99?
99, yep.
And then here a year later, you have Caitlin in 2000. Then Keenan, and Keenan, by the way, I know is your maiden name.
Yeah.
Then here comes Justin, 2005, you had a planned C-section. That is when you actually started Hint. So girl, could you have gotten any busier?
It was crazy. But I think that the thing that really drove me was this was an interest of mine. I was passionate about it. I was curious. I was solving a problem for myself. I go back to something I talked about with my dad. My dad was, I don't know if he was really passionate about food, but he was trying to solve a problem for himself, having dinner. And he hated Stouffer's TV dinners. And so that's where he's like, I want to make something better. And so that was really what drove him. And anytime that you can do something that solves a problem for yourself or for your family, or I just think it creates this need, right? And maybe even a timeline where you're like, I got to get this thing done. And so every day I would wake up and I'd just be inspired by thinking, okay, I made a little bit of progress. I was able to do this. I was able to do this. And I wasn't sure whether or not it was all going to come out right. Friends of mine would hear that here's this tech executive and I'm starting this beverage company. They would say, isn't that risky? And I would say, why do you think it's so risky? And they were like, well, people in tech will think that you're not interested in tech anymore. And I kept thinking, well, I've done a really good job. So can I just say, get ready for this? I veered in this direction and here's what happened. And it didn't work out. Who cares, right? I sat there and learned a lot along the way. And I really think that the idea of embracing where you are and what you're learning, it can be so scary because I think that the scariest thing for people is failure, possible failure. And I knew that that was a possibility, but I also knew that I had done a lot of things that I didn't know how they were going to work out. And they kind of worked out okay. And there were some things along the way that didn't work out okay. At the end of the day, I learned a lot of things along the way.
And it's okay, Kara, when things don't work out.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're learning from those and you're taking those learnings forward.
Totally.
Oh my goodness.
And owning what happened. I mean,
absolutely.
Sort of a different path. But I've said this to people along the way where I remember saying something to a member of my team where they said, I don't want to interview somebody because they've been fired from their last job. And I said, well, why were they fired? And they said, I don't know. I didn't interview them to find out. And I said, I would find out. Maybe there was something there. Maybe they weren't passionate about what they were doing.
Right.
Right? Maybe they were in the wrong role. I mean, as long as they weren't indicted or something. I mean, there could be a lot of different reasons why. And instead of not owning, not embracing kind of your journey, I think that we all make mistakes along the way. And I think that if you can own them and learn from them and share with people what you have learned, I really didn't think that it was that risky to be able to do this. So anyway, I launched the beverage, and I mean, today we're the largest privately held non-alcoholic beverage in the country that doesn't have a relationship with Coke, Pepsi, or Dr. Pepper Snapple. When people ask me what's it like running a beverage company, I, you know, always kind of hesitate because for me, it was never about launching a beverage. It was about launching a health initiative.
Right. And I know you're doing so much more now too, Kara. What people don't understand is probably you've got chapstick, you've got sunscreen, you've got deodorant, you know, that doesn't have aluminum in it, but it's all under the precipice of health.
Totally.
A healthier choice, you know, and helping people live their best life, which I think is just so important. But I love the whole hint story. And you call yourself an accidental entrepreneur because you didn't set out to do that.
Yeah. And I had great training to be able to do that. I mean, everything, including, you know, working in a startup, working under people who were not necessarily super visionary, but had worked for people like Steve Jobs, who were visionary. I guess Ted Turner was very visionary, and Steve Case as well. I mean, just being able to show up and contribute and start from a tiny piece of paper and grow it into something. I always share with people, and particularly college students as well, that I don't think you'll like entrepreneurism if you cannot embrace this idea of building a puzzle with no picture. You know how you get the puzzle and you have a picture on the box and then you think, okay, eventually I'm going to be done with it? That is not entrepreneurism, or at least a scalable journey. And you learn things along the way. I think that the best visual for how I feel our journey has gone is that there's a bunch of pieces on the table. We're building along. Then people come and grab a bunch of the puzzle pieces. And then you're like, okay, wait, I found some other puzzle pieces. We don't really need those right now because we're working on this other thing. And then suddenly other puzzle pieces, more than you ever imagined, get thrown at you. You still don't have the full picture, but you just keep doing. Frankly, I'm an accidental entrepreneur, but I'm an accidental author too, because I was journaling for the last almost 5 years now about some of my experiences, because I would just crack people up about, you know, this journey and things that happened along the way. And I would say, you just can't even make it up. And this journal was over 600 pages. I mean, so much of this got cut. In fact, I laughed because it was all turned in before the pandemic. And so, I mean, there's a whole other book that happened during the pandemic and leading during a pandemic. And, you know, and I think more than anything else, I'm still smiling through the whole thing. And going back to Steve Jobs too, something that he always said that I think is so true is that the dots eventually connect. You know, there's things along the way that I'm sure your own experiences that you were just like, oh, that was this weird time. And I think even during the pandemic, for me, the 2008-2009 financial crisis, that hit me in the heart on a lot of levels, or the stomach, however you want to visualize it. But the thing that I learned about that time for me was that I didn't have enough money to operate my company, right? And so it was a scary, scary time. And so the minute that the pandemic hit, I said to my CFO, we need 2 years worth of money in the bank. And he said, the world has shut down. You are not going to be able to raise money. And he said, everybody's on Zoom. And I said, Zoom is a tool. Zoom is not a wall. And we have to get out there now. And we did. I mean, we moved really quickly. We had existing investors who were amazing, who basically said, look, your financial model is great. You need growth capital. We get it. And so we did. And we raised it. But again, the 2008-2009 time period never really made sense to me. It was sort of this awful time for the world, but also for us. And now I look at it as, I get it. I needed to go through that in order to be able to deal in a time that was scary during the pandemic.
You know, Kara, I was just thinking, there was a period of time where you really wanted to up the ante on the website. You're like, no, we've got to get our online presence in a better way. And there were people that like, no, we don't need to be spending money on that. But what I take from that is, in your gut, you knew that that needed to happen. And aren't you so glad? I mean, drinkhint.com is...
Well, it's over 50% of our revenue.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's tripled since last March. And what's really interesting is what I knew from my days at AOL was, when I was working with lots of, you know, retailers saying, it's not enough to just have a store and a catalog. You need actually to have this other channel, because there's this audience that really doesn't have time to go into your stores. They'd like to, but they don't have time. So you need to go online. And some people went with that concept, some people didn't. And it was easier for people who had a catalog, because you had a back-end operation to be able to fulfill and all of that. But during that time, I felt like it just was such an important time to be able to look back on what exactly was there that was like really dotting the I's and crossing the T's, if that makes sense, you know? And I think being able to articulate that to consumers was just super, super important.
Yeah, there's just so much there. One quote that you said, "The biggest factor in success is how you handle the miscalculations, the errors, the missteps, and the threats to your progress." It's going to happen. And the other thing, you know, Kara, I was just thinking in your book, chapter 11 is called Build the Airplane While You're Flying It. So in software development, as you know, being in tech, there's what's called the minimum viable product. And we talk about this all the time. Just get something out there, because I guarantee you, once it's out there, once it's in the customer's hands, you're going to see all kinds of things that need to be changed.
Yeah. And I'm sure you saw that as well. Like, I had huge budgets for doing focus groups, and I choose not to really do that. I'd rather get it out to, you know, the customer. And I think that is the key thing that we saw even with the direct to consumer business, is that I had this desire to do it and I wasn't getting the money from my board to do it. And so I had the ability to roll up my sleeves and just go and try and do it. And I would ask people along the way. I think that's another really important thing. Don't be afraid to ask for help. And I would share with people that I wasn't sure if it was going to work out or not, but I was just going to try. And I think that that's the most important piece.
I agree. I would encourage everyone, please go buy Kara's book, Undaunted. I have read every page. I did not skip a page. It's more to me like an autobiography of their whole journey, but there's funny things in there. There's lessons to be learned, insights.
Thank you.
You know, you're pretty much an open book. But Kara, this is called Something Extra. And I have to ask you, what is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
I think really recognizing that you need to pay attention to your own curiosity, your own desire to do what you feel like doing every single day. And don't get so caught up in, I've been doing the same thing for the last 20 years. In fact, that's the time, I think, to go and take a risk and be on a journey, and don't fear failure. Instead, view it as lessons along the way that you're going to learn to just be a better leader, a better human, and really take all of those learnings and just move forward more than anything else. I mean, if you only have this life to be able to do what you want to do and make a difference, and, you know, as people have talked about, what's on your tombstone? What do you want it to be? That you went out and took risks, you went out and did what you wanted to do? I think so. And that is, I think, more than anything, what I want people to come away from this and my journey with.
Absolutely. Well, Kara, I mean, I don't know. You've got so many things you can pitch, and we didn't even talk about this, but I know you're on a mission right now to make sure that schools have good, clean, pure water. I mean, you've got a podcast called Unstoppable. You're doing so many things, but what would you love for our listeners to know? How can they get involved?
We actually changed the name of the podcast to The Kara Golden Show not too long ago, and it's every Monday and Wednesday. And, you know, I really look for other CEOs and leaders that I think are doing some pretty incredible things that you learn lots of lessons from. But, you know, I think more than anything, pay attention to sort of what I'm working on, because it's always something interesting. And we're waiting to see what we can do around clean water initiative. I'm working with Congresswoman Jackie Speier on that and hoping to take something before Congress, hopefully before the fall. So we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Very good. Well, follow Kara. You're on every social media platform, right, Kara?
Yeah, so definitely reach out to me. I'd love to hear from people.
That's awesome. Well, Kara, thanks again so much.
Thank you.
This was super fun. So much fun.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.